Hello, you're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Hooligan. You can read my columns in the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly. My co-host is Tovin LePan, reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. This week, Democrats are gathered in Charlotte, North Carolina, to nominate President Barack Obama for another four-year term. Last week, we discussed the state of the Republican Party, and today we turn to the Democrats. Joining us is longtime Vegas journalist Hugh Jackson. He's co-host of The Agenda, which airs at weekdays at noon on KSNV, the local NBC affiliate. And also joining us, Andres Ramirez, longtime Democratic operative here in Nevada. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you. Hugh, you're a Democrat given to some amount of pessimism. I might even say a Democrat in bad standing, sometimes frustrated with Democrats' failure to stand up to Republicans. So let's say you're a bellwether for the liberal left. How are you feeling as Obama takes the stage again to be nominated in Charlotte? Are you feeling hopey?
Well, first I have to make a correction. The agenda on Channel 3 airs at 12:30 as opposed to noon.
<I'm sorry.
laughs> Got to get the plugs out of the way. You know, am I hopeful? Am I hopeful with respect to Obama's chances and the Democrats' chances in the fall? Yeah, certainly I am. I think that a lot of folks have not, they don't like Romney and they don't blame Obama. And yes, they're not happy with the economy, but I think that there's a lot of sentiment out there that, look, this is not Obama's fault. He inherited all this. And the Republicans have failed to make the case that is going to put them over the finish line. I know this is about the state of the Democratic Party. I would say that one of the things that's fortunate for the Democrats is that they're in a much better state than the Republican Party. So from that standpoint, I'm certainly hopeful, just from an electoral standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Andres?
Well, we're certainly not worried about the type of liberal left revolt that the Republicans experienced with their extreme right revolt and the Ron Paul folks at their convention. There's obviously a lot of work to do to help reach the agenda, the optimistic agenda that many people signed up for in 2008. But there's a lot of successes that we have to cheer and to celebrate. You know, repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, passing the Lilly Ledbetter Act, the Affordable Care Act. There's a lot of things that we've been able to get through. Granted, not as far as people would like us to go, but we have a solid record to run on, and we're going to continue to showcase that, you know, Obama has a better vision for the country than the lack of vision that Romney Ryan is proposing.
Okay. Let's talk about here in Nevada. The Nevada Democratic Party has made incredible gains in the last, certainly the last decade, or we can go back to probably 2004. How is the organization, which has become pretty famous nationwide, for getting candidates elected?
You know, we're very fortunate. Back in 2003, Reid made a very intense effort to ensure that we put together a professional, top-notch operation to really rebuild the party and put us on a successful path. That started with the hiring of Rebecca Lamb. Fortunately, she's a great operative who's still around and still helping to guide much of the mechanics and the infrastructure for what our party does. So we've had consistency and longevity in terms of the pipeline for how we run a party machine. You haven't seen the same with Republicans. As a matter of fact, they keep dissolving and having chaos every cycle. So the fact that we've had strong, steady leadership of competent, qualified people have really put us at a much better position to build a voter registration advantage, to build a GOTV operation, to build a messaging operation that gives us an edge in the nuts and bolts of a campaign.
I was talking to another Democratic operative last week. He said that expect even more boots on the ground this time than 2008. But there's got to be a problem with enthusiasm. So how do you address that? Go ahead.
People have been talking about this so-called enthusiasm gap for a while. I'm not really, at least on the segments that we're looking at, I'm not seeing it. If you look at voter registration and voter registration among Latinos, which is one of the areas that people have talked about, an enthusiasm gap for Obama, we've actually registered more Latino voters this cycle than we have in the previous efforts that we've done, and we're still registering Latinos to vote. Between the party, OFA, and outside groups like Mi Familia Vota, the number of Hispanics that they're reaching and getting involved in the process is unparalleled compared to any other previous time that we've seen. in terms of the volunteers we're recruiting and enthusiasm we're seeing out on the doors, we really haven't seen much of a gap. Now, pollsters are saying that there's an enthusiasm gap, but it's not something we've seen, at least I've witnessed, on the ground among the target demographic groups they've mentioned here in Nevada.
Well, if I could, on this enthusiasm gap thing, I mean, one thing that we have to remember is what 2008 was. I mean, 2008 was this incredibly historic election, and people were incredibly whipped up and excited about it. I mean, it was very, very dramatic.
And it started with a long primary campaign.
Yeah. A long, exciting primary campaign between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, especially on the Democratic side. And so, and then, of course, you know, yeah, the economy, given that the economy has not recovered as much as everyone would have hoped, and then comparing that to the excitement, the promise that was 2008, the historic nature of that election, it would be shocking if there were not some kind of enthusiasm gap, I think. Mm-hmm. There's no way that you can recapture that kind of lightning in the bottle that you had in 2008, I think.
But I think that Obama reached his nadir point, his low point, in the summer of 2011 during the debt ceiling negotiation. I think that's when Democrats probably felt the least excited. What has he done? He seems to have, in the past year, made some gains amongst his base. What do you feel like he's done to achieve that?
I think that one of the things that he's done is the emphasis on fairness in the economy and everybody getting a fair shot, and the emphasis on how unfair it is to give more tax breaks to the wealthy. Now, he's been bashed for this. The Republicans, of course, call this class warfare, et cetera, et cetera. I would point out that I think the Democrats, at least over the last 20, 25 years, have been really reluctant to take on this kind of populist economic argument, if you will. And this is one of the more hopeful things. You got back earlier asking about hope. I'm actually hopeful about the Democrats that they are not afraid of this argument anymore, that they might actually be willing to come out and make an economic fairness argument. Having said that, I would like to see that transfer further down the ticket from Obama down to, for instance, Shelley Berkley and the folks that are running for Congress here. And then at the state legislative level, I think that that argument is almost non-existent among the Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Andres, what do you, amongst volunteers and the activists that you work with, are they feeling better than they were a year ago about the president anyway?
Certainly. And there's a variety of things. There's the deferred action order that he signed on that helped the DREAM Act students get more excited about their base. There's the economic populist stuff that Hugh Jackson has mentioned. There's a variety of other stuff that he's working on. He's been going to pretty much every college campus in the past few months to excite young voters again. And so we're seeing that at least now Obama may have spent a large portion of his time trying to work with Republicans to govern in a statesmanlike manner. And he's spending these last two years of his first term understanding those negotiations just aren't going to work the way he wanted to. He's more relaxed in who he was, what he originally wants to fight for, not having to compromise or concede to Republicans as much as he did. And I think he feels comfortable in his skin now, and so he's willing to take on Wall Street more proactively. He's willing to take on some of these bigger interests that he may not have prioritized much in the back in the first 2 years.
And he's run a pretty tough campaign. Do you think that Republicans, I feel like they underestimated his willingness to do this.
You know, this has actually been kind of fun to watch, at least from my perspective, because for years the Republicans ran this let's go slap the Democrats around type of campaign. And the Democrats kind of, you know, look at John Kerry, look at Mike Dukakis.
Yeah. Oh, Bill Clinton was the exception.
He hit me. Stop it. And so instead, here comes Obama and Axelrod out of the gate, and they're saying, well, let's slap these guys around a little bit. And they just keep slapping them. And now you hear Romney saying, oh, he's being mean. So I love this turning of the tables. I think it's just fun to watch and long, long overdue.
Andres.
Agreed.
And speaking of some of the strategies in terms of coming out of the Republican National Convention, you had and from the Romney campaign, we have the issues of their ads saying that Obama has tried to repeal the work requirement for welfare, and their attacks on his statement saying the small businesses, you didn't build that in the context of infrastructure and government aid and roads and all those things. And then, of course, Paul Ryan's speech where, you know, the next day everybody was talking about misrepresentations and sort of certainly bending the truth, if not lying. And so how do the Democrats come back during their convention and go after those attacks, which may be effective, if not accurate?
Well, I think that the Republicans obviously have run some dirty campaigns, too. And this business about the welfare work requirement is a flat-out lie. Everybody that's looked at it has said so. What I find interesting, though, about this whole tact is that here you have this economy that apparently is going, what the election is going to be all about, and then they go for this welfare work requirement, which is such small potatoes compared to the larger economic argument. It's just a cultural game that they're trying to play. They're trying to play that old culture card. It's a little bit of racial prejudice baiting, basically, with this stuff. I don't see how that wins them an election, and moreover, I don't see how that redefines Barack Obama in any way. See, the Democrats, they came out and they defined Mitt Romney. They tagged him, said, look, this is who this guy is, and he's got to deal with that now. They can't. The Republicans can't do that with Obama because Obama is a known entity, so they're kind of in a tough spot.
But aren't they, I mean, those welfare ads, they're running them, and they're running them heavily, and I mean, I presume that they're working. I mean, especially in Ohio, when you're talking about white working class voters who really hate the idea of money going from some people to other people, and you mentioned, there's kind of a racial subtext.
Well, they obviously have decided that they're making some traction, but still, I have yet to see any polling recently, and they've been running this ad campaign for, what, about 3 weeks now? Last I saw, Ohio's still in Obama's corner.
Does this worry you, Andres?
It worries me that their gut reaction outside of calling Obama of issuing a class warfare is that they are issuing these attacks that really are segmenting the population. There is an overtly racial and cultural tone to these welfare work ads that they're attacking him on. There is, you know, legitimacy to that, despite the fact that they're incorrect. And they are playing them overly in certain states, and it's not a national buy, and it's not being played in all the battleground states, only in certain battleground states. So it concerns me that, one, they think that that's going to work. But on top of that, what I don't understand is that if that's the angle they were going to, and they were going to play a xenophobic angle to scare people from voting for Obama, those types of voters weren't going to vote for Obama anyways. So it's not like they're peeling off any of these things, which is why I don't think you're going to see any movement in the polls. I think what they're maybe trying to do is, we're talking about an enthusiasm gap, is they're trying to rally their own conservative voters who aren't that excited about Mitt Romney and trying to give them a reason to say, hey, look, I'm willing to take him on and take on those cultural issues that you don't like anyways, but I need you to come out and vote for me. And I think that's a larger part of what they're trying to do than really hurt Obama among his base or among the voters he's appealing to.
I think you're right. I think they are trying to rally the base. But I think effectively what they're doing, and we can expand beyond the state of the Democratic Party, but to the state of the parties, for the Republican Party, long term, this is bad. This is a bad idea. They are pushing more and more people away from them, including more and more white people who, frankly, are not enamored with and not impressed by this line of attack. And it's just making the Republican Party smaller and smaller. And you've got a few folks like Jeb Bush, Lindsey Graham, who said it in a very inopportune way earlier this week, that we just can't find enough angry white guys anymore, you know. they are getting a shrinking universe of voters who are willing to go with the Republicans, and that hurts them over time.
It's like a team that trades for some aging star late in the season, but they trade away the entire farm team in the process.
Typically not a fan of sports metaphors, but that's pretty good.
Sorry. How do Latinos feel about a campaign like this, this welfare to work campaign?
Well, interestingly, they're not running that ad in Spanish. And it's really not.
But they are running it in Nevada.
They are.
Yeah, okay.
We haven't really seen a huge impact, particularly among Latino voters, on this process. And so, I mean, I just don't know that this ad's going to make any impact on Latino or minority voters, maybe other than the...
Other than rallying
to say, how dare they? How dare they pretend to imply that minorities are disproportionately benefited by welfare, mm-hmm. when in fact the reality is that an overwhelming majority, 60-plus, of welfare recipients are Anglos or non-minorities. Mm-hmm. So this assumption that this must be to try to mobilize, you know, these Anglo voters that, look, we have to get those lazy minorities off of welfare and off the government subsidies. It's an old tactic that I just think doesn't work anymore.
Okay. Let's go down the ticket a little bit. Hugh, it must have been a year ago when you predicted that the Shelley Berkeley Dean Heller race would be totally substance-free and would address none of the important issues of economic opportunity or fairness or whatever. And I believe the prediction has played out.
More or less. I have got a little bit of hope, largely due to the Paul Ryan pick for vice president, because that has elevated the discussion of entitlements so much and Medicare. And, of course, Heller being the only person in America, or the solar system for that matter, who voted for that first version of the Ryan budget twice. Mm-hmm. This is a great opening for Berkeley to, at least on that score, have a somewhat substantive discussion. And, you know, it's often batted around by the pundits. They say, oh, well, both sides are twisting the words about Medicare, and both sides are just making up and saying, vague things about Medicare talking points. That's not true. There's very, very different policies at work here with respect to what Obama has done with Medicare in coordination with the Affordable Care Act, and what Ryan and the Republicans want to do with it, which is basically turn it over to the private sector. Now, I don't expect Shelley Berkeley, for instance, to start talking about the need to, you know, get out there and tax rich people and spread more money down and redistribute the wealth or anything like that. I'm not seeing her going anywhere that anytime soon. But I think with at least on this Medicare thing, we might get some substance out of them, and perhaps more than we otherwise would have because, again, of the Ryan pick. Now, that said, this diamond investment thing or whatever just seems to me, ads that Shelley Berkeley is running against Dean Heller, seems to me to be kind of a hard thing for average voters to wrap their brains around in the first place. And more importantly, it is a distraction from this larger substantive issue of Medicare. Similarly, Heller's attack on Berkeley for an ethics scandal, quote-unquote, the trail has seemed to have gone cold on it. I mean, there's been no new or additional information since the New York Times first reported this months and months ago. But that has nothing to do with the larger issues that are going on and affecting people's lives. But that's obviously what Dean Heller wants to run his campaign on. So, yeah, there's a lot of fluff in there, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Tobin, you've reported on Shelley Berkeley and her support amongst Latinos. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I mean, I think it should be pointed out, you know, obviously last time we had a Senate race, it was Reed versus Sharon Angle, and she went the exact opposite route of the of Heller this time around, where Angle, you know, basically demonized Hispanics and tried to go that route. Well, Heller has got his Juntos con Heller group, which is sounds a lot like Juntos con Romney. So, you know, they're not very creative if they're reaching out, but they're not creative with their names.
They're consistent in messaging.
Right, Juntos. I'm sure Berkeley will do better than Heller, but obviously the polls right now are showing that she isn't doing quite as well among Latinos as Obama is doing. And, you know, she needs to... she needs to do better, probably. And now they're saying, I was talking to a UNLV political scientist, he said that if Heller can get 35% of the Latino vote, I mean, that's putting him in a really good position. And right now, some polls have him at 30%. So, I mean, if he can make some more progress in that way, and they're trying, which is more than, you know, Sharon Angle could say.
Mm-hmm. Andres, what's going on? What's going on there in that race that she's lagging Obama amongst this important voter bloc?
So I think there's a variety of things. First of all, we know that in Nevada, a Republican can win statewide without Latinos, but a Democrat has not won statewide without Latinos. So it's a much greater burden on Democratic statewide candidates to make sure they hone in that base. I think what we're seeing part of this is that we are a battleground state for the presidential cycle, and we've been inundated with messages on a presidential side. And on the presidential side, they started very clearly Obama trying to define who Romney was and Romney trying to now counter.
And when Romney defined himself.
Right.
Also.
And when you have that much investment on a national level from not just the presidential campaigns, but these outside groups, these super PACs and third parties, and then you also have a competitive Senate race, it now makes it infinitely harder for them to try to break through and define themselves or get their message across, because all the airwaves are already being cluttered with these national messages. And on the Senate side, what you had is you had Heller come out and define Berkeley right away, start attacking her, whereas Obama attacked Romney right away. Heller came out and immediately started putting Shelley on the defensive. Heller, we know, has a higher statewide name ID because of his previous office, where Shelley doesn't. One of the other bigger things that people don't understand is that Shelley may represent the largest number of Latinos in the state for a congressional district, but the largest number of Latino voters live outside her congressional district. In fact, most Latino voters have never voted for Shelley Berkeley, so they have no idea who she is, or I shouldn't say no idea, but they have less of an idea than the people who are in her district. So her job of having to reach out to voters, which is not the problem that Reid had. Reid was a statewide candidate and had long ties with Latinos statewide. Obama as well is a statewide candidate and already has a name ID out there. So Shelley needs to be able to break beyond her congressional district and find a way to reach those Latinos that are outside her district and be able to message them, breaking through all the clutter of a national campaign that's already sucking up all the airwaves and making it hard for even her to put an ad on TV for her to break through, because there's so much and people tune out after the first two ads. And that's the trouble she's had. I don't think it's going to be impossible for her to do. I should say I don't think it's impossible, but it's a much harder task that she faces than Reid faced or other previous candidates mm-hmm. we've had.
To what extent in the last in 2008, the last presidential election, there were a lot of voters who went in the booth, they hit Obama, and they walked out. They voted for one candidate. Now he obviously, there were coattails that helped other candidates win, but there was a lot of that. To what extent will we see that this time, or does Shelley Berkeley get helped by his name being on the ballot?
I think she definitely gets helped by his name being on the ballot. I think you see the drop-off less this time, partly of what we talked about earlier. There was an over-enthusiasm in 2008. Many of those people that created the over-enthusiasm were just there to vote for Obama. That segment of the population has kind of dissipated for 2012. So
you mean they're not going to vote?
Meaning we're not going to have as many people turn out who are just turning to vote for the first time and just voting simply to make history and be able to elect a candidate like Barack Obama. We're not going to see as high of a percentage of those voters turn out this cycle.
Hugh, you're a professor at UNLV. These are your students, the type of
I'm merely a part-time instructor.
Who go in the booth and they're the ones who voted for Obama and they walked out. What do you see this happening again?
Well, I think Andres makes an excellent point, which is, again, the difference between 2008 and 2012. There probably will be a drop-off of those kinds of voters. There will not be as many of them that were out there. It's certainly, there will be coattails because there will be more people showing up to vote in 2012 than there were in 2010. And Harry Reid beat Sharron Angell. Now, granted, anybody could beat Sharron Angell, but Harry Reid beat Sharron Angell in 2010, in a midterm election year, when turnout is...
Terrible economy.
Turnout is much lower. Turnout is going to be higher this year than it was in 2010. And it may not be as high as it was in 2008, but it's still plenty high enough for Berkeley to have a perfectly good fighting chance to pull this out.
Mm-hmm. All right, you're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Kulikin. My co-host is Tovin Lepan. We're joined this week by Hugh Jackson, a commentator and longtime Vegas journalist, and Andres Ramirez, Democratic operative. We have a few minutes left. Let's go down the ticket. Andres, you and I have talked about what really matters, and I think that the future of the state of Nevada is going to be determined more by what happens up in Carson City and in city halls and the county commission building and the county building than necessarily Washington. What does it look like, especially on the state Senate side, where there's a real close, it's going to be real close as to which party controls the state Senate?
I'm going to make a bold prediction as a Democratic operative that we hold the Senate and increase our margins.
That's a dumb question. You got me. which candidate, and don't just run down the litany of candidates, tell me which of these new candidates you think is a rising star. One or two of them. You can't pick them all. And they can't be your clients.
Who's that lead?
Fortunately, I don't have any state legislative clients. I'm really excited by people like Justin Jones, who's running for state senate. I think Justin Jones is a very smart person who brings a lot of passion and integrity to the work that he's doing. I'm inspired by someone like Patricia Spearman, who is now a new senator.
Who beat an incumbent
senator.
Right.
I think the passion...
So not a senator, yeah.
By default. I think we're seeing a lot of changes in the Senate and in the Assembly. And I think particularly people like Justin Jones, particularly people like Patricia Spearman, who aren't shy to make their opinions known.
And what kind of message are they going to bring to Carson? What are they going to bring to Carson City?
I think Justin Jones in particular, who has been a longtime advocate for environmental issues, people like Red Rock and so forth, will be able to come in and champion much more clearly to define a vision for how we need to be controlling our public lands, our public parks, for how we protect the environment, how we move forward with some of the infrastructure projects we have. You know, some of the stuff that actually Dina Titus used to fight for way back in the day that we've had a void for in the Senate for a long time. So I'm really excited about that. I'm also really excited, on a personal level about, the opportunity for Mo Dennis becoming the first Latino majority leader in the state Senate. Someone like Mo Dennis, who is not a show horse, but is a workhorse, to see the type of leadership he can bring to a state Senate with the type of work ethic that he has in Carson City.
Q, what do you think about this?
Well, we were talking earlier about the organizational capacity of the Democrats and how impressive that has been. But when it comes to policy, I wish that the policy capacity of Democrats would match their organizational capacity. And I think that nowhere...
Who cares about policy?
I think nowhere is this more evident than when you get to the Democrats in the state legislature. I think that from an organizational standpoint, yes, there's a very good chance that Andres might be right and that the Democrats might hold on to the Senate, hold on to the Assembly as well. But I am reminded that when the Supreme Court said that Medicaid expansion would be an opt-in thing for the states, you had Mo Dennis, incoming Senate majority, hopefully leader, Marcus Conklin, the Assembly Speaker, incoming Assembly Speaker, both saying that, oh, well, we don't know if this is a good idea or not. It's a no-brainer that this is a good idea. That's what Harry Reid calls it. But these guys are saying, well, we don't know. April Mastroluca, who chairs the Assembly Health and Human Services Committee, a Democrat, actually said that now is not the time, that we can't afford Medicaid expansion. This is the kind of problem that drives me up a wall when it comes to Nevada Democrats. Yes, organizationally, they're good to go, but from a policy standpoint, can we put some pants on, please? The same thing with respect to the broadening of the tax base. And the AFL-CIO and the NSEA, the Nevada State Education Association, trying to get a petition to finally make businesses in this state who pay no taxes finally start to pay some. And these same folks, Marcus Conklin, Mo Dennis, not wanting to take a position on it. This is what I find most troublesome about the state of the Democratic Party today.
Alas, the Stockholm Syndrome is powerful in Carson City, as I think a few of us know. All right, I want to thank Andres Ramirez and Hugh Jackson, who have been our guests today. My co-host is Tovin LePan. Our producer is Steven Zeller. Thanks for listening. This is KUNV 91.5, and you've been listening to Neon Eden.